Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, driving passion for sport and communities throughout Ireland and abroad.
We may not be able to get in on the sporting action like we're used to, but we can get in on some exclusive offers from Renault. To celebrate their second year as official car partner of the GAA, Renault is offering a range of special offers on their new and used vehicles, exclusive to all GAA club members. So now you can take home the win right to your door. Check out renault.ie/GAA to find out more.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen back to Eden, and now they're really roaring.
And I can tell you, there won't be a cold milk somehow declared for at least a week.
Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined today by Oisín McConville, by Ciarán Sheehan, and we're joined also by a very special guest today, Eamon Fitzmaurice, one of the select group of men to win All-Ireland Senior Football Championships as a player and as a manager. Eamon is here not least because next Sunday, Cork play Kerry in the Munster football semi-final. We'll be having a look at that game in depth later in the show, and we'll also be looking at Dublin, who start with their Leinster quarter-final against Westmeath, and of course in Connacht. There is one match in Connacht this weekend where Mayo play Roscommon in the semi-final. But before we go anywhere near this weekend's games, we have to have a quick look back at last weekend's matches. 9 counties had their seasons ended, including Tyrone. Now, Ciarán, you predicted that Tyrone would win last weekend. What went wrong for them?
Yeah, look, they got off to a flyer of a start. I thought, look, I suppose Donegal's pressure, and in the end, I thought Donegal's discipline again. You know, and I know Oisín mentioned that previously, that he was very impressed by him when he saw him first up. But I thought their discipline and their leadership, like Michael Langdon, for example, was super impressive in that time where they were 5 points to 1 down, getting a crucial goal and score. I just thought they never panicked. There was no sense of, you know, panic when Tyrone did get a bit of a lead. I thought it was just obvious that they had a system, were sticking to it throughout the whole game. And it worked for them in the end. I thought, to be fair, I think the conditions didn't suit Tyrone. Now, I'm not a man to complain about conditions, but on a dry day, I think it might have been a little bit of a different game of football. But I thought Donegal, in fairness to them, they looked super impressive.
What do you think, Oisín?
This game did not pan out the way I seen it pan out. To be honest, like I didn't want to say it. Like, but last week, like I genuinely thought Donegal would win the game comfortably, but everything just fell into place early on for Tyrone. And let's face it, they probably had enough chances to win the game. A wee bit more coolness under pressure, a wee bit more. Like if you take Mark Bradley's chance, like he's 1-on-1 with Michael Murphy, and he's got the fanciest chances in that situation. Peter Hart, you expect, you know, him to be cool under pressure and stick that in the back of the net. You know, the McKenna chance that McMenamin saved off the line is unlucky as well. But as I say, it did not pan out the way it panned out. If you had said to Tyrone before the game, Murphy wouldn't be in it, Ray McHugh would be poor, Patton would have one of his off days, Jamie Brennan, only 2 points, I would have said that Tyrone would have been very happy. But I suppose the positives that Donegal will take out of it is that without Murphy and without McHugh going the way or going, without showing that bit of leadership, the two young lads, Langan and Thompson, really stood up and got them across the line. That pace that I talked about in the first league game, you know, Mogan, Peter Mogan and Niall O'Donnell, Mogan was okay, but it didn't really materialise. I think we will see a bit of that when they get onto a better side. and it looks as if that might be the All-Ireland semi-final before that happens, because they're talking about playing Armagh and Donegal in Omagh in November. Those two things just don't add up. And so they'll probably have to grind another game or two out, but I think they'll win Ulster okay now. But as I say, the game did not pan out the way I thought it would. I thought Donegal would win a bit more comfortably than they did. But I think when both teams walk away this weekend from last weekend, Donegal will be very happy at the fact that, you know, their big players didn't play and they still got across the line.
Are they real contenders, Eamon?
I think they are, Paul. Yeah, I think, look, everyone's a contender at the moment. And with the teams, like you said, 9 teams fell last weekend, and it's going to be every weekend there's going to be less and less left, obviously. They were very impressive. I think they got the job done, in particular their response to the Dara Canavan goal. That was a time for Tyrone to build the momentum, and they had the couple of chances that O'Sheen mentioned there, and they didn't take them. And in fairness to Donegal, that's the sign of a team that are in a good place, that when they are hit with something like that, and, you know, it was a mistake as well. So it was something that could suck the life out of a challenge. But to be fair to them, they responded well. And Tyrone, as O'Sheen mentioned there, they were unlucky with a couple of incidents. They had a couple of chances. And I think they're a bit of indiscipline as well, in particular the two frees that were brought in. That's the kind of a thing from a management capacity afterwards you'd be scratching your head. Now, the first one was very soft. It was the merest of little tugs on the jersey off the ball, and it was brought in. The second one looked like it was for verbals, but both of those kicks would have been much tougher if they were from the original spot. And when you only lose by 2 points and the margins are so tight, you would be scratching your head with little bits and pieces like that.
There was an interesting thing that happened in that game, that Tyrone got off to such a flyer, like 5-1 up, and then the water break came. If you were managing a team at the moment, an inter-county team, what are you doing in the water break? What if you've got that short period of time, what would you try and do with it?
I think the water breaks can be very powerful for a management team. Like you said, for Tyrone, it probably came at the wrong time, but certainly if you're behind, it can be a chance to regroup and a chance to get a quick reset. And just remind the players of the couple of instructions again. I don't think it can be overly complicated. I think if you have possession of the ball yourself from a kick out, as most of them seem to be, you can have some kind of a set play that you could remind the players about running. But I think as the season goes on and teams and managements become more and more accustomed to the water breaks, I think they're going to become very powerful and they could be crucial. But similar to halftime, that when you're going well, you don't want it to come. And when things are going against you, you can't wait for it to come just to get that reset. And the pattern does seem to be so far the team that is going well coming into a water break, They don't come out as well out of the water break. So that's probably a challenge. It's probably something that you can try in training, that, you know, you have a quick water break for the minute or two and just see what effect it has in training, getting the players used to it and accustomed to it. But like I said, the further on the championship goes, I think they'll become more significant, and just like a timeout in some of the American sports.
And have you thought out, have you, like, if... I read what you wrote about Mourinho, and I agree with it. At half time in matches, he was talking in unbelievable generalities about it's almost like it was. It felt like the equivalent of being back in the 80s and 90s in a dressing room where lads were basically telling you to get stuck in, try harder, seemed to be the message. But are there specifics that you would use the water break for? Are there to communicate, or what are you trying to communicate when you get the players at that point of a game?
Yeah, I think there are absolutely specifics. I think generally now inter-county teams are so well run and there's such an amount of data available to the management team at halftime that if you have some kind of an analyst to give you a particular stat around a particular part of the game that you think yourself needs addressing, for example, that if you're talking about kickouts and you have a feeling watching the game yourself as a manager that you're under pressure in your own kickout, or you're doing well on the opposition kickout, or you've got scores from your kickouts, that you can give that kind of a feedback at halftime. You can say, look, lads, we need to really improve our own kickout. We've only won two of them. We've conceded two scores from it. What we're going to do now straight away is we're going to start going long. We're going to start going short. We're going to go to a kickout we've planned. And once we start winning those, we're going to start to build on that again then. We're doing very well in the opposition kickout. We're after getting 4 points off the opposition kickout. We're doing this because we're pushing up. We're going to keep doing that. We're going to keep driving it on. There's joy to be had for us there. And I think if you can just give a solid bit of information backed up by some statistic, it makes it very clear for the players. But I don't think, especially in the water break, whatever about at halftime, where you can maybe do two or three areas in a water break, it'll be one particular area that you might think will give you a leg up or will continue with the pattern that is there and to build on that. But I think it has to be simple, but it's backed up maybe with a bit of data, and it's not, like you said, come on, lads, we need to be better and we need to show a bit more heart or whatever. It has to be a bit more specific than that. And I think the modern players buy into that, and that's the way they train, and that's the kind of feedback that they want at that stage.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? And I don't know if the Kieran or Rushing want to comment on this, but the idea of the modern player and getting feedback and coming into you. Are there players, though, who actually just don't want any information? Are there players who actually don't want to be in a dressing room where they're being told stuff? Are there players who should be left alone, who should just be allowed to go out and express themselves and play, and that, okay, there are some players who need information and others who thrive on it, but there are a few who just, you know, actually the worst thing that can be given is information?
Yeah, I think that's part of the management, that you understand the players that you have, and a particular player, you know, might play off instinct and that suits them better. But
have you anyone in mind?
I have one or two that I could think of that would...
Come on, put them out there.
Prefer not to be getting too much feedback. But no, I think in general, most players now, they want that kind of detailed feedback, and they want the generalities, and they want to be instructed, or not instructed, but advised, and they make what they want out of it then. But I think, you can confuse some players, certainly, if you're giving them too much information, and you don't want that. You want players to be able to play with freedom, and you want the whole team to be able to play with freedom. But at the same time, as a team, you need to be able to give possible to-dos that can be done in the next phase of play, rather than just talking in a generality that's, you know, that means nothing to anyone, really.
Can I come in on that, Eamon?
Yeah,
sorry, Rashid. In relation to the breaks, and I don't mean to come back to AFL too much here now, but the four quarters, they often call it the third quarter being the kind of winning quarter. And look, when you're getting that second water break, you know, I think it's a crucial period between, we'll say, halftime and that water break. I think it's the make or break of a game on where the team's at, how they reset it at halftime, how they're attacking the second half of the game, and that they're prepared, very prepared for that second water break, because coming into the last quarter, there's a lot more factors come into play in relation to time. You know, guys start to get a little bit more tense. I think they're playing their freest football in that period between, we'll say, after halftime and that second water break. And in relation to the modern game, I think the feedback and understanding the structure and strategy of how a team wants to play, I think is critical. I think that goes for every player in the team, I think, in relation to understanding. Now, certain players might want different type of feedback and might want it to be more simplified. But I think if you can get, and Eamon said it there, if you can get to-dos and 1 point across in that short space of time that you have, that you're confident it will hit the nail on the head, I think is crucial for lads going forward.
I was at the Cavan Monaghan game, and 7 points down at halftime, I thought the instant reaction is, because Cavan put no pressure on Beggins kickouts, I thought the instant reaction at halftime is go back out and you pressure the life out of his kickouts, and Cavan didn't. and it was stick or twist sort of job. And I could see between the water break, maybe after 10 minutes of the second half, I could see Dermot McCabe, who was probably the most active runner I've seen of all the runners of the weekend, getting on and trying to get that message. But there's a couple of boys just weren't getting it. And they obviously then decided, listen, let's wait till the water break, which I felt was dangerous at the time, but they waited till the water break. Look, you can beat me a point, you're a gobshite, you win the game and you're a hero, and that's the way it worked out for Mickey Graham. But once they pushed and pressed, the fact that they had the water break, you could clearly see that they were dictating that message and making sure that everybody understood that message rather than a runner trying to go round. And I'm sure they've got a word or they've got a signal or they've got something. But at the same time, until I see the whites of players' eyes and see everybody is going, yeah, I don't know what we're doing. And you could see that when they went out after a water break that they knew exactly what they were doing. I mean, this isn't the first time this has happened to Cavan. Manny McLean was over them. They played Meath in a league match, Division One league match, and I remember Manny McLean coming out when he was appointed, and he said, "Listen, I'm going to play open, attractive football." That lasted for about a half an hour, and they were getting absolutely destroyed in Meath, and all of a sudden they just said, "Listen, we're going to go man to man. We're going to play ball," and they pressed up, and they actually ended up winning the game. Cavan have a bit of history with this stuff, but I just thought, you know, as far as using the water break, you know, when I see Monaghan going in, Monaghan were very much, you know, we have this, you know, we're 6 points up. I'm sure Bandy was just saying, listen, lads, just try and keep the ball. Let's try and mind the ball as best we can. But once Cavan
had a mistake, though, was it the way Monaghan played in the second half?
It was shocking. It was hard to believe, to be honest. It was hard to believe because, you know, you mind the ball, but you, like, realistically, like, if you're Monaghan, you're thinking, if we kick 4 or 5 points in the second half, we win the game. And they couldn't even manage to do that. And, you know, just how negative they were shocking. And the players who were able to punch a bit of holes, O'Hanlon, Bannigan, like, they were all, McCarthy, they were all, taken to one side and replaced by players who are going to do exactly what we talked about, just mind the ball. And again, look, if Monaghan win the game by a point, you know, Bandy's done the right thing because he's won the game. But it just didn't feel like the right thing at the time. And obviously now it's a fucking disaster as far as they're concerned. But I just thought that as far as water breaks go, I thought that was the most effective use I've seen from Cavan at the weekend.
This weekend, moving to this weekend, Cork, Kerry, Ciarán.
I'll sit back for this one.
Yeah, we're going to hold the coat here, Oisín, let these lads at it here. Ciarán, do Cork actually believe that they're going to win this weekend?
Between a rock and a hard place here, Paul, being a player. Absolutely.
I should say that at the beginning. So Ciarán's out injured from this match, is around the squad, but is not, says he's not talking out at the weekend. So we'll take his word for that. But so like, what's the belief? Is there actually genuine belief that Cork will win at the weekend?
Absolutely. This is an interesting one because, and I'd be keen on all of your takes on this as well, to be honest. If I'm wearing a Cork jersey, and I'm playing Kerry at the weekend and I go into a dressing room and the management or any other player or any part of the squad can see that I don't believe that we're going to beat Kerry, I'm wasting my time. I should be taking that Cork jersey back off me and walking out the door. And I think that's from what I'm seeing, that's the attitude of this Cork team. They have had significant success against Kerry underage. I don't know how much that's going to account for. I think fellas are confident that they can put it to Kerry. I think based off the back of last year and what I've seen, as I said, look, I haven't seen a whole pile of Cork up close in the last number of years. But what I do know from this particular group of lads, that there's a bit of edginess, there's a bit of rawness in the group. combined with a good structure and strategy in place now off the back of Keane O'Neill getting involved, Kevin Smith from a high performance perspective, finally tuning guys. I absolutely think that they can win, and I believe they can win. And I think
how? So what's the strategy?
Without going into too much detail, look, I think how they're going to do it is going to be based off pressure. I think that's a big factor in across the board in football today. But I think Kerry, particularly in the last couple of league games, they haven't been tested a huge amount in relation to pressure. What I mean by that is, and notoriously, this is how we would prepare for Kerry is, and I think everyone would see that, is that, you know, you can't give Kerry time on the ball. You know, you give the likes of Sean O'Shea, you give the likes of David Moore and, you know, Gavin White, these guys, time on the ball, they'll pick out a pass. And that's just the way they've played. And that's the way like they continue to play. But if you're up in their face and you apply that pressure, now, again, I know it's important to recognise where you apply that pressure and when you apply that pressure. And I believe it's, you know, coming into the Cork defensive half. I think that's when the pressure has to be ramped up. I think Kerry noticeably play with their heads up. They look for that pass. So important that, you know, when they do lift the head, that pressure is applied immediately. Just to force errors, force Kerry into unforced errors. And I think counter-attack off the back of that, because...
And where are Kerry weak? If you're looking at Kerry now, where do you think Kerry are weak?
And again, this is off the back of what I've seen over the last couple of weeks. I think on the turnover, I think if Kerry get turned over in high up the pitch, I think defensively, I've noticed that there seems to be a mad rush back, a little bit of disorientation. But again, structurally and just looking at Kerry defensively, when they are set, they're very hard to break down. So I think what's crucial for Cork in this game is on the turnover, that they're attacking with pace with the likes of Sean Potter, Matty Taylor, these guys that have unbelievable leg speed. I think that's the best way that they're going to break Kerry down. I think the midfield battle is crucial here as well. I think Ian Maguire has shown that he's, you know, one of the best midfielders in the country over the last number of years. And I think that's going to be an interesting battle there between, I'd imagine, him and David Moore. And so I think there's a couple of factors. I think the midfield battle, which I think Cork will win. I think that they'll put a significant amount of pressure on Kerry, force turnovers. And I think, judging even by last year, going for the juggler, going for the goal. Now, I know Kerry will be a little bit more prepared based off the back of last year. I think they got a little bit of a shock there. But I think that's how they're going to win.
And one last question before I come to you, Eamon. If you're talking on Sunday, if you were starting, which of the Kerry backs would you like to see coming in on you?
Immediately springing to mind are probably maybe Tom O'Sullivan. That's purely based off height. No, the only issue there is he'd have me on the back foot straight away and I'd have to chase him back the field, which I wouldn't be quite comfortable.
You do a lot of pointing though. Pointing, you hand him on fairly quickly.
I think that's key. Good delegation. The best forwards delegate really well. Oisín, you might comment on that as well. You might know that as well. But, you know, to be fair, it's
so you'd fancy a cut at Tom O'Sullivan?
I'd like a cut off all of them, to be honest. I don't know. What about you, Paul? Who would you fancy a cut off there?
They'd have to go zonal to hold me. There wouldn't a mere man marker wouldn't be fair on it wouldn't be fair on anyone. Eamon, are you nervous after hearing that?
Well, to hear a confident Cork man isn't that unusual. No, look, I think everything that Ciarán said is valid there, and I think it's going to be a great game at the weekend. I think, look, there's always a wariness in Kerry prior to Munster championship game against Cork, particularly in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Any of the times that Kerry have lost Munster championship games, going back as far as 1995, was the last time Kerry lost a game in Killarney. So any of the games that have been lost in that intervening period have always been in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. So there's always a wariness. There's always that derby factor, that, you know, form and where you are in the league and all that kind of stuff goes out of it. But, you know, from the Kerry perspective, I think just looking at the lads the last couple of weeks, a lot of them look to be in very good form. They're playing well. There aren't too many of them searching for form. You know, the panel is deep. I think the hurt of last year as well of getting, you know, so close to winning an All-Ireland final can be a fierce driving factor as well. And the straight knockout factor as well, I think, you know, it almost brings a bit of fear, and that can be a great driver as well. So, you know, I think from the Kerry perspective, there will be huge respect of the Cork challenge that's coming. And they know that they'll have to be on top of their game to win the game. But, you know, if Kerry are on top of their game and if they're at it, if they're working as hard as they have been for the last couple of weeks, I think Kerry will have too much. And I think particularly with the likes of Kieran out, who would have been, you know, a big addition to Cork from last year, I just think that Kerry will have too much by the end. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it does goes down to the wire.
So isn't that really it, though? Like, I read something that you said back in 2018 about it being part of a Kerry men's DNA to be wary of Cork, and that, you know, Cork's problem had always been backing up progress when they'd made some steps forward. And you said that when you won six Munster titles in a row when you were manager against Cork, and that it was clear that it meant a lot to you and that you approached the Cork game diligently. But all of that, doesn't all of this come down to the basic fact that for Kerry, this is a stepping stone to an All-Ireland semi-final and to a final, ultimately?
It is. But I mean, it's a slippery stepping stone. That if you don't approach it properly and you're beaten, that's your season over, as we saw with Tyrone last weekend. So, you know, every game is a stepping stone once you get over it. And I think that, you know, the fact that in the past, those Kerry Cork games, when I was in charge, all of those games, we absolutely went all out to win them. And we wanted to win a Munster Championship. And we also wanted to go through the front door and, you know, what we perceived as a better way of trying to win in All-Ireland. Whereas this year, that security blanket isn't there. So you have to win or that's it. So you're gone and it's season over. So I think that will bring an extra edge to it. And I think from the player's perspective as well and a management perspective, I think the fact that there's no crowds there, there's no, you know, potential for a night out afterwards as a team, win or lose, all those things. Everything else is stripped back from around it. It becomes a bare contest about, and it's all about winning. So I think that can bring an edge to proceedings as well.
But you can't really see Kerry winning. You can't really see Kerry losing in this.
I'd be surprised if Kerry lose, to be honest. I just think they're in a very good place. Like I said already, they'll have to play well, and particularly mentality-wise, they'll have to be at it, because Cork aren't going to roll over. As Kieran said, they were, you know, they're well prepared. Keane O'Neill, certainly, who I know well, is a big addition to the setup, and he's going to bring his own particular stamp. He'll know a lot of the Kerry fellas quite well as well, and he'll have that bit of insider information. So there's a lot of things that are right from Cork's perspective. And if Kerry aren't at it, Cork absolutely can win the game. But I just think where this Kerry group are at the moment, I'd be surprised if they don't win at the weekend.
Oisín, it's Cork's hope against Kerry's expectation, by the sounds of it.
Well, if you look at Cork 2010, the spiral has been very much downwards from that until now. I hope that, you know, Cork do believe that they can win this game. I hope that, you know, it's not a case of we hope we can win the game. But if that is the case, there would have to be an unbelievable sea change from what I have seen of Cork over the last couple of years. And I think a lot of things are right with Cork. The improvement and trajectory looks to be upwards, but could it be any other way? Look at the size of Cork playing Division 3. You know, I live in Armagh. I have no connection with Cork whatsoever. And I found myself over the years getting so frustrated with what was going on in Cork. That really hasn't changed. And nothing I've seen since is going to tell me otherwise until they win one of the big games. Simple as that. And this weekend, they have the opportunity to do that. But even if they don't win the game, Cork can still get something out of this weekend by proving a couple of things. First and foremost, that they're up for the fight. Secondly, that tactically they've got a plan. And thirdly, they've got players who are willing to die for it on the pitch. I think those three things, that'll be a sea change as far as I'm concerned. And then we can talk about Cork being on the right road. But until that happens, for me, you know, they're still way off where they need to be and where they should be and where Cork football needs to be. So there might be a lot of things right. There's a lot of things going right. They're moving in the right direction. But I would expect so much more of them. So much more. And as I say, until I see that, you know, Cork will still be a massive question mark hanging over Cork heads.
Can I come in on that? I can see what you're saying.
Do you feel way off, Kieran? That's to use Oisín's phrase there. Do you feel way off?
Absolutely not. And Oisín, to be fair, and I think a lot of people are thinking the same, that Cork can get something out of this by not winning. That's too much. That has gone on too much for Cork football. I think they can't accept anything else but a win. I think this game has actually got so much riding on it for Cork football. And the players know that. And the players are going to give absolutely everything. If Cork are one win away from people actually kind of sitting up in their chairs and starting to notice that there's a team here. I've been involved with them since last November. They won the under-20 All-Ireland last year. They won the minor All-Ireland last year. There's a good buzz in the group. I was waiting to go into a training session a couple of weeks ago and you mentioned about a stepping stone. I hope that Kerry are viewing this game as a stepping stone. We are waiting to go into training and there's an elderly man passed us by and he stopped and he said, are you training this morning? We said, we are. There was a few of us standing outside and he said, I'm a Kerry man myself. And do you know what? He gave us a good test last year. I was walking through the doors and there was steam coming out my ears. I was like, a good test, is it? But look,
a little warm up for the real stuff.
I just hope that that's the view that people have down in Kerry at the moment. Because and look, I don't think it is. I think a lot of this Kerry group clearly show that they're capable of competing. You know, and no matter what the game is. And I think it's a huge challenge for Cork. I still think that the days of accepting a performance and not getting a win, I think has to be removed from Cork's psyche. And I think moving forward, I think this is a huge, huge game for Cork.
So who's holding Clifford and who's holding Sean O'Shea, to give you two examples? Who's holding them?
The days of matchups are almost kind of going away now with team defence, but... I think Kevin Flahive there from Douglas has done a reasonably good job over the years on the likes of Ganey. I think he might get the job on Clifford. I think in relation to Sean O'Shea, he's a tough matchup for us in terms of his height and actually his ability to fetch a ball as well. I think that it's likely that maybe Sean Potter or Matty Taylor might be picking him up with good leg speed, which I think is important to work Sean O'Shea the other direction. I think that might be a matchup there. Again, I'm not 100% sure. I guess they're the two key ones for Kerry, but I do think that it's going to be a team defence game. You'll have the likes of, we'll say, Matty Taylor, or you'll have the likes of, Paul Ring, some new faces there that are going to slip into that defensive role. We'll say that'll fill a hole in order to protect that the full back line as well. I think that's going to happen. I think it's going to have to happen. I think most teams are doing it. It's going to be a team defence and being able to help each other out there as well.
Eamon, when you prepared for Cork, to what extent was it about them or was it about Kerry? To what extent did you worry about getting matchups right?
No, absolutely. You'd give respect to the opposition. I think most teams, in fairness, Paul, as you know yourself, you concentrate on yourself first of all. and you try to get yourselves right and get, you know, all of your players healthy, get everyone that's playing well on the pitch, pick a strong squad, you know, be ready for all eventualities. And then, of course, you're looking at the opposition. Where are they strong? Where are they weak? Where can we get at them? Where can we, you know, where do we have to be very wary of them? I think always against Cork, because of the way they play with their strong running game and the attacking droves together that they've caused us, you know, problems through the middle, creating goals and goal chances. And it's always been a challenge dealing with that. You know, in Kerry, a lot of teams play a kind of a kicking style game, similar to the game that the county team plays. And then when we come up against teams that are running hard at us like that, it's something that you're preparing for in training, but it's not something that we come up against every day of the week, either at club level or at county level. So that's going to be something I'm sure the players and the management will have looked at for the weekend. But I think, to answer your question, you're trying to get yourselves right. And if you have everyone right, you have a good chance of winning most games. But of course, you're wary and cognizant of what the opposition are going to bring as well.
Looking at Kerry, though, in the couple of league games, it seems to me that there's a change in how they're setting up and how they're playing. They are kicking the ball a fair bit, but there seems to be deeper defence and there seems to be a lot of ball running through the hands with halfbacks going. Is that how you'd go about this?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it. I had my chance of going about it my way or the way that we went at it or whatever, but I think it's very effective. I suppose so far, you know, Kerry have played against Monaghan and Donegal, teams that had set up in a similar fashion, and that kind of a game suits, but they're certainly working ferociously hard, and I think that's very obvious, and it's something that they've worked on, that everyone is working very hard and working back the field, and like you said, getting lots of bodies into the Kerry's half of the field when Kerry aren't in possession, and then when Kerry turn over the ball, going the other way, and you know that there's lots of legs and pace in the team, and it's half backs and full back line players that are going the other way a lot of the time after the forwards working back and doing their shift. So that's certainly been a feature so far. I think it works well against certain teams. I think it can work well against Cork at the weekend. I think if Kerry go further down the line, they'll have to tweak it, because I think against teams that set up in a more orthodox fashion, it'll be challenging. It'll be more challenging to play that type of a game against them.
And in that, yes, in that respect, so that's where the challenge will come, particularly if you get to the latter stages. So let's talk about this for a second. Eamon, you wrote in your column last week, you talked about how Kerry tend to win historic All-Irelands, and you talked about, say, winning in 84 and winning so on. And you left out a couple, by the way. I have to say this as a historian, you left out the fact that they won the 25th. Yeah. They won the 25th anniversary of the GAA, and they won the 75th. They didn't win the 50th. Galway won it, but a Kerry man scored two of the goals for Galway in the final. So I have to give them a bit of a say in this. But I read that column and I thought straight away, he hasn't said it baldly, but he thinks Kerry are winning the All-Ireland this year.
I think Kerry have a great chance, absolutely.
No. You're saying no. Do you think Kerry are winning the All-Ireland this year?
I think they have to beat Cork, first of all, on Sunday, and I'll talk to you again next week if you want. I think Kerry are in a great place, and I think absolutely they have a great chance, but this year of all years, it's very uncertain. But I think if you can win on Sunday and you're into a Munster final and you're playing either Tipperary or Limerick, and you know, if you do your work properly, you're going to win that, and suddenly you're in an All-Ireland semi-final. So there's a roadmap there to get there and to do it. But I think absolutely Kerry have a massive chance of winning the All-Ireland, but I'd still be hugely wary of Cork on Sunday. And Ciarán mentioned it there, that he's hoping that possibly Kerry are looking beyond Sunday, and it's okay for the likes of me to be looking at the big picture and seeing what's out there. But I know within a group like that, it's only Sunday, and there's nothing after Sunday, and that's the only focus that there is and the only focus there can be. So, yeah, I think Kerry have a huge chance, but get over Sunday, first of all.
Oisín, he thinks they're going to win it.
Yeah, it's obvious, isn't it? look, at the thing's been cleaned up very, very quickly. You know, 9 teams went last weekend, 10's going this weekend. So we are whittling it down. And even though, you know, at the start of the year, I would have said, you know, there'll be a surprise here or a surprise there. Probably when we get the, not probably, when we get the last four, there's going to be very little surprises. And that leaves Kerry with an amazing chance, I think, because I don't think, you know, if you look at the Connacht, the way things are going in Connacht, the likelihood is, you know, well, it's going to be either Mayo, Roscommon, or Galway.
You're covering a few bases there.
But most likely, on the evidence of what we've seen in the last couple of weeks, most likely Mayo. And I think Kerry would feel that they could handle Mayo at this stage. And then we're back down to, you know, to an All-Ireland final. So to say that they have a good chance is probably an understatement. But I seen them against Mullen. I was very impressed with them. And yet I walked away thinking Kerry could have kicked on and won that game a lot more comfortably. And then you try and frank that form with what Mullen did last week, and it probably doesn't add up. You talk about the Donegal game and the fact that Donegal were down a good few bodies. So Kerry will want this game, need this game, and apologies. And this will prove a little bit to themselves this weekend of just exactly where they're at, because it is a very difficult thing to tell when you get into knockout football. But I can see Kerry obviously in an All-Ireland final, and then, you know, it depends how Dublin are going in the meantime.
Yeah, so let's get to that. Dublin-Westmeath. Dublin make their seasonal Leinster Championship bow on the weekend against Westmeath. How do you think they're going?
How do I think they're going? Yeah. They're just going through the motions. They're going through the motions.
Is it possible to say how Dublin are going?
They're going through the motions. They're playing at 50% of what they're capable of. There's no make or shape or anything to them. Anybody who's trying to analyse them, if I was in the Westmeath camp trying to analyse what Dublin are doing, you'd be delirious trying to think. You know, you'd be keeping you up all night, because at this stage, if Desi Farrell is going to play to a certain plan, then he certainly hasn't shown that yet. That goes for the league games before we went into lockdown, and that goes for the two games that they played afterwards. They're just playing. That's what they're doing. It looked to me like they're a team that are playing to get as many players, as much game time as they can. And I don't know if they're going to show anything this weekend. Do they need to? Probably not. And the possibility is that as far as intensity goes, they will start to ramp it up from this weekend. But there's nobody in Leinster going to touch them. So, you know, their sights are firmly set. I mean, they can already almost start planning for Donegal. And I know that sounds very, very disrespectful and very, very submissive of the likes of Kildare and Laois and all these teams, but that's effectively the way it is. And but if Dublin think that they can go into a semi-final against Donegal and rely on the fact that they have a lot of very good players, a good forward line, and that they can blow Donegal away, Donegal will have a plan for them. That's what I can guarantee you. And I think that from a Kerry point of view, what I've seen for Kerry over the last couple of weeks, I think, you know, it's up to Kerry now to stick to the way they played. Like people say, oh, they just did that because they were playing against Monaghan or Donegal. I don't believe that. I believe this is a new way that Kerry want to play, a new style that Kerry want to play. And I think they're going to stick to it and see where that brings them.
Kieran.
Yeah, look, Cork will be playing Mayo in the semi-final, so they'll have to face Dublin, I guess, in the final. But I'd have to agree with a lot of what Oisín said there. Dublin haven't really shown their hand from what I could see. What I do know is that's a little bit of a concern, I would say, from my side of things, in relation to, we spoke about the word cohesion a fair bit, and it's a bit of a word that's been thrown around a fair bit, but in relation to building momentum and cohesion and, you know, a good style of play and personnel on that team, and you're used to playing with them. And I'd be keen on your views on this, Eamon, as well, in relation to the Kerry teams that you are you were managing, but that almost becomes a crucial factor in, doesn't matter who you're playing. Now, it's important that you get the best out of every player. And, you know, there's times where you need to rest guys and, you know, make sure that they're fresh for you know, big games. But I do think that there's an element of concern around Dublin putting their starting 15 that are going to win in All-Ireland and that coming together now in the early stages to give them momentum and get a good run into how they're going to play alongside of each other. Now, that's not to say that Desi has some, you know, intense A versus B games going on that we know nothing about, that, you know, he's playing, you know, that 15, that stronger 15. But I just think it's an important factor to consider for Dublin and for Desi Farrell, that he starts to bring together a team that inevitably is going to be that starting 15 in an All-Ireland final. As Oisín said, you can't be disrespectful to other counties, you know, in Leinster, because Meath, for example, have just, you know, been super impressive. And look, there's a lot of things that have gone on this year that, you know, have been left field. And look, it just wouldn't surprise me if there's some bit of an upset over the coming weeks.
Eamon, Dublin, how far back do you think they've gone?
A good bit, I hope. Look, I agree with everything the lads have said there, and I do think, to go back to Kieran's point about the cohesion, I think they'll probably start getting themselves in line from this weekend on, because from the point of view of Desi Farrell trying to manage that group, if everything is up in the air, if every jersey is up in the air, you've 30 to 32 players that are questioning, where are they? Where am I in his mind? He's a new manager. Is he looking at me? Is he looking at doing something completely different? You know, outside of the three or four that are going to always play, are everyone else scratching their head a bit then? So I think he'll be looking to start establishing a pecking order in terms of his starting 15, his first 24, first 26, and then that everyone's competing to try and get further up the pecking order. That's worked well for them in the past and worked well for Jim Gavin, I think, in terms of that'll help with the style of play as well. Like Oisín said, that at the moment they just seem to be playing with a bit of freedom, playing off memory, playing off what they've done the last couple of years. There hasn't been anything overly new about them so far. But I think that, you know, if you're serious about winning things, you're going to have to start getting that in line pretty quick, or you will get caught, no matter how good you are. So I expect from this weekend on, we'll start seeing closer to the real Dublin. One thing I have noticed about them from the start of this year, the one pattern is that they haven't been as disciplined.
Yeah.
And even in their dealings with the referee, I would imagine it was a big thing by Jim Gavin that, you know, not to be going after the referee, because they have plenty of big personalities that would be trying to possibly, you know, get on top of referees, but they never seem to do too much of it during his time. And right since the first league game, they have been very vocal and, you know, cranky. And I think that can be looked at two ways. I think it can be looked at as a kind of a weakness, or it can be looked at as that hunger and that drive is still there, that they want more. But it is the one kind of big difference that I've seen so far, that they seem to be a bit looser discipline-wise.
Have you been in touch with Jim Gavin since he left? Have you?
I haven't. I sent him a message just to say well done, but I haven't been in touch with him outside of that.
No. The Dublin players, though, that have gone, and we can talk about the most immediate ones that have gone in Jack and Dermot Connolly and that, but if you step back, Bernard Brogan, step back before that, Paul Flynn, you're looking at, I suppose, generationally brilliant players. And for all that there's an extended panel there, the quality is not what it was. Is that fair to say?
I think it is. I think that at the moment, I think as those players develop, you know, whether the newer Buglers and these guys, whether they will be able to fill the boots that Paul Flynn, Dermot Connolly occupied in the half forward line previously. You know, so far they have been able to regenerate and you know, as Bernard Brogan was starting to come towards the end of his time, we got Conn O'Callaghan. So they do seem to be able to replace, but I think the big ones are Cluxton, McCarthy, Fenton. Fenton is obviously young enough that he'll be going for another bit. But have they players that will be able to replace Cluxton? I think Comerford is a very good keeper. Whether he'll be able to drive the standards that Cluxton did, I'm not sure. James McCarthy is probably irreplaceable.
Irreplaceable, yeah.
I'm not seeing a deputy there in terms of someone coming to the fore. And even the likes of Johnny Cooper, Philly McMahon, you know, those players, those defenders, Fitzsimons, they're outstanding players. And oftentimes when we were looking at Dublin, we looked at, you know, from eight up and them in an attacking sense. But they were brilliant defensively as well. And those players were outstanding defensively for them. Kian O'Sullivan was obviously hugely central to them, particularly from 2015 on with his role at centre-back. So, I'm not sure that they have the players coming through that are going to be able to replace all of them, but it'll still take another couple of years for that to have a serious effect on them.
Which of those Dublin players, when you were managing, if you could have picked one of them for your team, which of them would you have picked?
I suppose, in fairness to Stephen Cluxton, you know, he revolutionised the way the game played, and he allowed Dublin to overrun teams because of the amount of possession they had from their own kickout. And every team is quite good at it now, but he was way ahead of the curve the way, you know, he changed the game in that regard. But look, I think you take any of them that you could take. I think, look, we were always blessed with plenty of forwards and so on. So if you'd one or two of those hard nailer backs, you'd have probably taken them. But you know, having said that, I have to say, in my time in charge, I was always more than happy with the group I had and the group of players. And you'd have always felt that you had a great chance of winning the All-Ireland every year starting out.
I would always say in Offaly, if we could have had one dub, I would take James McCarthy. I think he brings so much in terms of his ability, his athleticism, but also his attitude and that absolute hardness when it needs to be done. He seems to always manage to find a way. I want to say something about Westmeath for a second. I think Westmeath are not too bad. I think they're a solid Division 2 team, and I think it'll be really interesting if they can have a proper go at Dublin. I don't think they had a proper go at Dublin a couple of years ago in their Leinster finals, but I think if they have a proper go at Dublin, I'm not saying that they're going to win, but I think it'll be really interesting to see how they can get into this. I want to talk very quickly about Mayo and Roscommon. Actually, there's a question for you. Sligo pulling out of the championship. Would the championship have been reshaped if this was Kerry or Dublin who had COVID cases?
Do you want to take that, Oisín? You do.
Yeah.
That was the big inhale there, I think.
No, I just want to say this on it. I would say this on it, that if I was a player from Sligo, I would be disappointed how it was represented. First of all, by the county board. Second of all, by the Gaelic Players Association. Because I don't think there was enough kicking and screaming done. I think if there was, I think there was an opportunity. There's a wriggle room, obviously, there. You know, there's an extra week or two to play with as far as the Connacht Championship. The Connacht Championship final is supposed to be on the 15th of November. And, like, you know, the All-Ireland semi-finals aren't until the first week in December. Yeah. So, you know, there's an opportunity there. So, you know, there's collateral damage in it as well, in that Galway don't get, you know, get that game that they needed. So it affects not just Sligo, but it affects other teams. But personally speaking, I think that, I think it was accepted a little bit too easily for me.
It's a bit like a Galway truth with the Connacht final. It's almost like the Hurling Championship. Actually, there's a thing. This Hurling
Championship. Has it started yet?
The Hurling Championship? No. Yeah. It's impossible to get knocked out of the Hurling Championship. Like, look, they're going to be at this for a week. Everyone's going to get a medal in the Hurling Championship this year. It's unbelievable. We're into the third week. I don't know what they're at. It's like Anthony Daly and the lads are going to have to address this basic fact that you can score from anywhere. There's lads, doesn't matter if there's a monsoon, there's lads hitting points from everywhere. You don't get knocked out. And then you're Cork, and okay, you get another chance against Dublin. Wexford and Tipperary both got well beaten at the weekend. So their reward is a weekend off and a bye to the next round. Like, it's I don't know. The lads are going to have to address this.
That's a circus. It's a complete circus. And they've gone soft too. Nobody tackles in it anymore either.
Eamon, you're gone quiet. Licks no blood.
Yeah. Look, it's a very skillful game, lads. But sure, I suppose if it was straight knockout, you'd have to go straight to an All-Ireland final, would you? There wouldn't even be semi-finals. It's just, I suppose, the numbers that they have playing the game. So I'll give a politically correct answer to make up for all your shoeing there.
Yeah. Obviously, we all love hurling. We can't let them escape. They've given footballers enough abuse over the last 10, 15, 20 years. Actually, 125 years. Mayo. Eamon, can Mayo win the All-Ireland?
Yeah, they absolutely can. And look,
this year.
Yeah, they can. Of course they can. I think, look, they just when you think that they're gone and you have them half written off in your head, they go and regenerate. And I think some of the players that they've brought through, particularly this year, but particularly in the last couple of weeks that we've seen, are exciting, and they're the kind of players that they need. So Mayo just have a habit of playing to the standard of the opposition. I think we saw it for the first, 15, 20 minutes against Leitrim last weekend as well. They have a habit of, being able to rise their game, the bigger the challenge. So you'd love for them to be able to just play close to their optimum every day out. Now, I think the test of the weekend is going to be a severe test. Roscommon are going very well. They're full of confidence. They have a lot of good players as well. And the promotion versus, like, Roscommon are going to be Division 1 next year. Mayo are going to be Division 2, so they've flipped spots there. And I think it's going to be a hugely interesting game at the weekend, and obviously against Galway then in the final if they get there. They're going to have no easy games, but I think they're in a good place, and I think Aidan O'Shea inside is a good look for them. I think Killian O'Connor looks very fresh and is playing well, as well as the addition of those extra players as well. And we still haven't seen some of the old dogs either, who will be important as the campaign goes on if they stay involved. So, I think they're big time in the conversation and they look to be in a good place.
I actually just want to ask you a question. And I know you have to go in a minute, but the 2017, how close did you come to playing David Clifford in that All-Ireland semi-final replay against Mayo?
We were, how close? The thought crossed my mind, but look, he was still a minor at the time. For the drawn game, he wasn't even in our minds. But when we drew and we had a replay coming up, obviously he wasn't going to be playing in the minor game before the replay. And it was something that crossed my mind. But look, I think it might have been a great stroke, but I think it would have been a panic move at the time. And what were you saying to your squad that had been training all year, that had won the National League, that had won the Munster Championship, to parachute in a minor, basically.
He's different, though, isn't he? He's different.
He is different. He is different, and he's exceptional, and he could have probably done something for us that day. But we were so poor in the replay against Mayo. David Clifford or five David Cliffords wouldn't have saved us. We were miles off it. We should have won it the first day and we didn't. And for whatever reason, we were as flat as a pancake the second day. And it was probably, in my time in charge, it was probably the most disappointing performance to be at such a stage and to have a chance to have a cut off Dublin in All-Ireland final and to play so poorly. It was disappointing, but it crossed our minds, and we had a brief chat about it, but we ruled it out pretty quickly.
How would you stop him, by the way? One last question. How would you stop David Clifford?
I'm happy I don't have to.
You're not giving anything away there, Eamon.
it's supply. It's like, look, you have to cut off the supply. Or otherwise, put five backs in them and leave the rest of the forwards free and see how they do that.
It's probably fair to say that Mark kind of benefits Dave. Like he's an unbelievable athlete. But, he's a good size. He's rangy left and right. But I think that's one thing that will benefit him in the long run is the introduction of the Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. And he is like, look, he's more than a one-trick pony, and he's just, and again, he's a big personality. And I think today against Donegal in the league game recently, he was more of a creator in the first half, and then he turned it on a bit in the second half. And, you know, he's very mature for such a young guy. So, yeah, I'm glad I don't have to be marking him anyway, is the way I'll put it.
So to close out this weekend, we're going to do this really simply here. I'm just going to call you the matches, and you just give me a name who's going to win these various games. Dublin, Westmeath, three of you.
I'm going to put my neck in the line, say Dublin.
Dublin there, yeah.
Thanks for that, Oisín. That's very quite brave.
Dublin.
Okay. Limerick Tip in the other semi-final. You by the way, Eamon and Ciarán, you do know there's another semi-final on at the weekend. Have you? We do.
Well aware of it.
Would you be worried?
We lost to Limerick in the McGrath Cup earlier this year. I thought they were super impressive. I thought they were impressive again last week. I do think Limerick will come out on top against Tip.
So you're saying Limerick for that one. What are you saying, yep. Eamon?
Tight. I think Tipperary.
Tip.
Oisín.
Tip.
Cavan Antrim.
Cavan,
yeah.
Fermanagh Down.
Down,
yeah.
Okay, across the board. Roscommon Mayo.
Mayo.
I thought you were going to say Roscommon, Eamon. Longford Laois.
Laois.
I'll go Longford.
The general air of indifference to that match, just very, very revealing. Wicklow, Meath.
Meath.
Wicklow.
The big one, Offaly, Kildare. Think carefully now.
Sorry, Paul. Kildare. We'll have to backtrack.
Go Kildare as well. Sorry, Paul.
Oisín.
Kildare, Paul.
That's, yeah, okay. I'd say Offaly for some strange reason. And let's call this one now Cork.
Kerry.
Yeah. Okay. Lads, that was a pleasure. Just to say a big thank you to Reno. Eamon, we hope we talk to you later in the season. We'll hope that you'll be back on to give your views on how the Cork Dublin All Ireland football final goes. Ciarán and Oisín, we'll chat again next week.
Okay. Thanks, lads.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.